Good afternoon, brethren. There are few words that can have great impact on mankind. Think about the quote from Neil Armstrong. We all know it. We can all probably quote it before I even say it. But he said, when he walked on the moon, that's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. And apparently, I didn't know this, but apparently he intended to say that's one small step for a man, one giant leap for mankind. But he didn't say that. So, well, it still came out well. We all appreciate it. And even decades after he walked on the moon, and of course in the news, Buzz Aldrin's in the news now lately too, we're still quoting that because it was such a monumental point in history that we can all remember. I wasn't even alive at that point, but we can all look back and see films. We can remember it if we were alive at that time. Him saying that impactful quote, one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. You know, words can have great impact positively in that way, or they can have impact negatively. Think about just over the weekend, President Trump said the following. He said, "We are going to do something in Greenland, whether they like it or not, because if we don't do it, Russia or China will take over Greenland. And we're not going to have Russia or China as a neighbor," he told reporters at the White House. He went on to say, "I would like to make a deal the easy way, but if we don't do it the easy way, we're going to do it the hard way." Now, coming from me, if I were to make that quote, it would have no meaning. It would have no impact because I don't have any authority. I don't have any sway over the United States or its ability to acquire Greenland, as President Trump is trying to do. Now, but instead, this quote is coming from the President of the United States, and therefore it does have great impact. And his few words here have, in effect, set Greenland on fire. Whether people are for it or against it, the world is upset or excited. Whatever it is, whichever side the people in the world are taking, it's lit the world on fire. And that's just one little nation, Greenland. I mean, it's big, but population-wise, it's small. The tongue and our words, used either effectively or ineffectively, can alter the course of mankind. What we say has impact on other people's lives. And this message couldn't have been set up by a better sermonette from Mr. Jesse. So at this point, let's turn over to James chapter 3. James chapter 3 and verse 1. I'm going to read one of the most commonly remembered passages on the tongue. Let's get right into it. James chapter 3 and verse 1. "My brethren, be not many masters," or teachers, is how it could be translated, "knowing that we shall receive the greater judgment." We've been through this before. You can look to become in the ministry and be in the ministry, but understand that being in the ministry is getting yourself a greater judgment. Not only because you are in control of your own life and your own character and overcoming your own faults and trials, but you're now responsible for helping others in the church do the same, pastoring them, making sure that they're staying on the straight and narrow as well. Verse 2, "For in many things we offend all. If any man offend not in word, the same is a perfect man." How many of us have never offended anybody before? We've all offended people, wittingly or unwittingly. "And therefore, none of us are perfect and able to bridle the whole body." So if we don't offend with our mouth, what this is saying is you're a perfect man. And by not being able to offend with your mouth, you are able to bridle the whole body. Everything about you, you're able to control. Self-control, if you will. Behold, we put bits in the horses' mouths, that they may obey us. And we turn about their whole body. A giant horse, thousands of pounds, up to thousands of pounds it can be moved by just a little bit of pull on tug on the reins from the bits in the horse's mouth. Behold also the ships, which though they be so great and are driven by fierce winds, yet they're turned about by a very small helm, just a little bit of a turn of the wheel. Wheresoever the governor lists, and the little tiny rudder in the back turns a giant ship. That's like the tongue. Even so is the tongue in verse 5. It's a little member and boasts great things. Behold how great a matter a little fire can kindle. Think about President Trump. What his tongue said, you know, he's been talking a lot about Greenland over recent months. Even since early in his second term, he's been speaking about Greenland and the prospect of acquiring it. But never has he spoken so strongly as this last weekend. And boy, what a little member, his little tongue, can kindle quite a fire, can it not? And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members, that it defiles the whole body. We can be defiled entirely by our tongue. What we say, the things that come out of our mouth, this little tiny piece of muscle impacts the world greatly and others greatly. It can defile the whole body and set on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire of hell. For every kind of beasts and of birds and serpents and things in the sea is tamed and has been tamed of mankind. Think of all the animals that you can tame. The dogs, the cats a little bit less so. Horses. I've heard zebras are very difficult, if maybe not even possible to tame. But think of all the animals that you can tame, that you can domesticate. I've even heard of people who've owned raccoons when they were younger. You can domesticate a raccoon. You can domesticate squirrels. Animals that you would normally think are just out there in the wild. A lot of animals can be domesticated. They can be tamed. Of all these different kinds of beasts, they can be tamed, verse 8, but the tongue can no man tame. It's an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. Therewith bless we God and even the Father, and therewith curse we men, which are made after the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceeds blessing and cursing. Think of all the wonderful things that can come out of the mouth and such, and just as quickly and easily, evil things. My brethren, these things ought not be. Does a fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter? How does God want our mouths, what does God want our mouths to speak? He doesn't want a mixture of bitter and sweet. He wants strictly sweet. So the question is how is it even possible to make just sweet water come out of your mouth, if you will, proverbial sweet water only, if a couple verses earlier he says it's impossible to tame the tongue. You can't tame it. So says God in his word. The tongue is an untamable thing, unlike the animals in the world. So what do? Is God telling us we have to only speak sweet water, but it's impossible to tame our tongue? Is he giving us an impossible task? No. What is he saying? What is he saying? Let's just continue reading through verse 12. Does a fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter? Can the fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries, either a vine figs? So can no fountain both yield salt water and fresh. So, the Bible is plain. The tongue cannot be tamed. But yet we must tame it to become perfect, as it talked about in verse 2. So how is this possible? How is this done? What do we do? Seems like quite a conundrum. Luke chapter 6. Luke chapter 6, and we'll pick it up in verse 43. What do we do about this conundrum? For a good tree, this you could almost look at this as a continuation of the verses we just read. Think about this verse 43 in Luke chapter 6 as immediately flowing off of the last verse that we read about figs and sweet water and bitter water. Verse 43, for a good tree brings not forth corrupt fruit, neither does a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. For every tree is known by his own fruit. For of thorns men do not gather figs, nor of bramble bush gather they any grapes. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth that which is good, and an evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart brings forth that which is evil. Here we go. Here's the key. For of the abundance of the heart, his mouth speaks. What we say originates deeper. It originates deeper than just your esophagus or your vocal cords or your tongue. It comes from deeper than that. It comes from down here. God says the heart. For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. We say things because it starts in our heart, in our mind, in our hearts. Deeper, much deeper. Everything that we say, brethren, is a window into our heart. You know, we have homes. If you look at a home, you've heard of peeping Toms. At night, there's a peeping Tom outside your house. He can look inside your window and get a glimpse at what's on the inside of your house. That's like our mouth, our tongue. The things that we say are a window into who we really are and what we really are feeling, the emotions we have, the intents that we have, the character that we have. Everything that we say is a reflection or a window into that character. So, while the tongue is untamable, our character is not. God wants us to change the inside in order to change and affect the tongue. That's the window to the inside. So while we can't specifically change the tongue, as God plainly says, we can change who we are. We can change our character. So how should we control our tongue? How do we even do that? Turn over to Psalm 140. Psalm 140. We'll read a few verses here and then turn to Psalm 141, the next chapter. This is about King David. Psalm 140 and verse 1, deliver me, O Lord, from the evil man. Preserve me from the violent man. David was in trouble. He was calling on God to protect him, deliver him from these evil people. These violent people, which imagine mischiefs in their heart. So where does their evil come from? It comes from their heart, who they are, their character. Continually are they gathered together for war. It's who they are. They're warlike people. They're violent people in their core. That's who they are. That's how they're defined by David. They're evil. They have sharpened their tongues like a serpent, and adder's poison is under their lips, Selah. So when evil people are violent from their core, it's reflected in their tongue. Their tongues become sharp as knives. They become like poison to those who hear them. They're violent people on the inside, and therefore you can tell that by their words. Okay, let's go over one more chapter to Psalm 141. Let's pick it up in verse 3. We can pick it up in verse 1. Lord, again a psalm of David. O Lord, I cry unto you. Make haste unto me. Give ear to my voice when I cry unto you. Let my prayer be set forth before you as incense, and the lifting up of my hands as the evening sacrifice. Set a watch, O Lord, before my mouth. Keep the door of my lips. David was wanting to learn from his enemies. He's asking God to help him keep his mouth shut, keep the door of his lips. How? How does David want God to help him, you know, control his lips? Verse 4 says, incline not my heart to any evil thing, to practice wicked works with men, which work iniquity. And let me eat not of their dainties. So David knew, he learned from his enemies. He learned that their wickedness, their evil, their violence came from the heart. And you could hear it in their voices. You could hear it in their words, their sharp, piercing tongues, like a serpent. David knew that fixing his tongue involved first fixing his heart. Jeremiah 17 and verse 9. If the tongue is untamable, and we can't tame it, it's impossible to tame it. The heart is tameable, but that doesn't mean it's going to be easy, brethren. Jeremiah 17, 9 proves that. The heart is deceitful above all things. All things. So while it's impossible to tame the tongue, let's just say it's very difficult to tame the heart. But we have to. That's our job. That's our job as Christians. If we want to have a pure tongue, if we want to have words that are edifying toward others, if we want to be truthful, if we want to live lives of Christians where our tongues aren't offending other people, we have to tame our deceitful heart. That is our job as Christians. But it's deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? Who can know it? God says that I, the Lord, search the heart. I try the reins, even to give every man according to his ways and according to the fruit of his doings. God is constantly looking at our hearts too. So know that it's not just our hearts that we're looking at ourselves, trying to tame. God is right there with us, watching our hearts as well. Where is their heart? He can much more easily see our hearts than other people can. But other people can see our hearts too. Because why? Because they have that window through our words into our hearts. Ecclesiastes chapter 9. Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 3. This is an evil thing among all things that are done under the sun, that there is one event unto all, yes, also the heart of the sons of men is full of evil, and madness is in their heart while they live. And after that, they go to the dead. That's a strange way of putting it, but they go to the dead. They die. For to him that is joined to all the living, there is hope. For a living dog is better than a dead lion. Well, a lion is powerful in its time. If it's dead, I'd rather be a living dog. Not as powerful, but at least you're alive. At least there's still time in our lives, brethren, left to help start to work on and fix our character so that we can, in effect, change our tongue from the inside out. Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5. Go to the Sermon on the Mount. Matthew 5 and verse 8. It is possible to purify our hearts, brethren. Well, it's not easy. We have to tame them, and it is possible. And with God's help, he can give us that ability. Why? Because it says right here in verse 8, blessed are the pure in heart. We can be pure in heart now. We can be pure in heart now because we will see God. One of the qualifiers in order to see God in the future in prophecy is we have to be pure in heart now. And God says that we can do it, therefore it's a promise. Anything that God commands us to do in his word, he's also simultaneously promising us that he can help us to achieve that. He wouldn't tell us to do something that he knew was impossible for us to do. So therefore, if he's commanding us to be pure in heart, it's a promise that he can help us to become pure in heart. But it takes some work. The pure, the clean means in heart, we'll see God. We can and we must become pure in heart. And once we have a pure heart, our lips will follow. And Proverbs 15 and verse 26 proves this. Let's go back to Proverbs 15. Proverbs 15 and verse 26 says, the thoughts of the wicked are an abomination to the Lord, but the words of the pure are pleasant words. If we're pure in heart, we've just seen in God's word that our words will be pure as well. They're pleasant. So let's examine a few underlying character flaws that can be exposed by our tongue. Let's start with anger. Proverbs 26. We're here in Proverbs. Let's go to Proverbs 26, a few chapters over. Verse 18. Anger. One of the reasons that we speak wrong, have bad language, evil language, language that it offends other people, language that is not edifying, is because deep down we're angry. Maybe it was a spontaneous anger. Maybe we just saw something that caused us to become angry. Or maybe it's a deeply rooted anger. Something that's been with us for a long time causes us to speak improperly. Let's read about anger in Proverbs chapter 26 and verse 18. As a madman who casts firebrands, arrows, and death, so is the man that deceives his neighbor and says, Am I not in sport? Where no wood is, there the fire goes out. There's no wood to make sure the fire stays alive, then the fire just dies out. So where there is no talebearer, strife ceases. As coals are to burning coals and wood to fire, so is a contentious man to kindle a fire. Contentious people are often quite angry. They're angry with other people. They're angry with themselves. They're angry in general. And where there aren't contentious people around, fire generally cools off and it goes away. The words of a talebearer are as wounds, and they go down into the innermost parts of the belly. Burning lips and a wicked heart are like a potsherd covered with silver dross. He that hates dissembles with his lips, and that word dissembles means to dissimulate or conceal or disguise. You hide things. He that hates hides things with his lips and lays up deceit within him. When he speaks fair, believe him not. When a liar or somebody who's just evil at their core speaks nicely all of a sudden, why should we believe them? God says we shouldn't. Believe him not. By their fruits you know them. For there are seven abominations in his heart. He hasn't changed who he is on the inside. We all must change who we are on the inside. Whose hatred is covered by deceit, his wickedness shall be showed before the whole congregation. Whoso digs a pit shall fall therein, and he that rolls a stone, it will roll upon him. Lying tongue hates those that are afflicted by it. When we lie, we hate the people that we're talking to. We'll get into lying a little bit more deeper in this message. And a flattering mouth works ruin. Let's just focus on this. Anger and hatred come from deep within. We have to put that fire out within ourselves in order to stop the fire from coming out of our mouths. Turn over to Matthew chapter 18. This message will get into a series of character flaws, if you could put it that way, that we need to be able to address and see and recognize in order to change the mouth, change what we're saying, what's coming out of our mouths. It starts with the inside. Matthew chapter 18, verse 6. Whoso shall offend one of these little ones, which believe in me, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and that he were drowned in the depth of the sea. Woe to the world because of offenses. Offenses. For it must needs be that offenses come. But woe to that man by whom the offenses come. We've all been offended, brethren. We've all been the recipient of offense. Somebody has said something to us that has deeply offended us. How dare you? Why would you say that to me? I'm offended by that. How could you say something like that? But we've also been on the giving end as well, have we not? We have offended others at times. And either way, whether we get offended or whether we are offending, it's often caused by anger. Anger offends other people. We're offended. We get angry when we're offended. So offenses are going to come, though. And when they do, how do we control our anger? Oftentimes, what it is, if we are on the offending side, if we're the ones who are saying offensive things, it's because we already are angry prior to saying that. Generally, when we're on the receiving end of offense, we get angry because of what we just heard. So whether we have anger that leads us to say something bad initially and offend other people, or whether we get angry because we just heard something that was offensive, and then we start shooting arrows back at the other person. Controlling our anger is how we squash offenses altogether. That's the key. That's the answer. Offenses are going to come. It's just a matter of how do we handle them when they do. There's nothing we can do if we're on the receiving end of an offense. There's nothing we can do to prevent it from coming. It's going to come. So the question that we have to ask ourselves is, are we going to get angry about it? How do we control our anger? How do we focus on what we say? What we're thinking? Because if we can control our anger in that moment, it will automatically help us control our tongue. Proverbs chapter 16. Proverbs 16 and verse 27. An ungodly man digs up evil, and in his lips there's a burning fire. Digging up evil on someone also exposes the hate you have toward them. If you try and dig up evil on somebody else, try and find problems with their past, or you try and dig up evil on somebody, it shows that you have hatred toward them deep within. Nobody who likes somebody else would try and dig up evil on them. Find out the bad things that they may have done in the past or whatever it might be. You only do that if you hate somebody. So we have to correct the hatred that we have, the anger that we have, even the root of bitterness that we might have. If you turn over to Hebrews chapter 12, what is a root of bitterness? Read about it briefly here. Hebrews 12 and verse 14 says, follow peace with all men and holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord, looking diligently lest any fail of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. What is a root of bitterness? It's anger that's within you that goes unaddressed for a long period of time. Think about what a root is. A root on a plant gets bigger and deeper and stronger to ground that plant. And the more, the deeper that the roots go, the longer that we remain angry, if you could put it that way, the better that plant will thrive. Except for if you have roots of anger, the plant that you're cultivating is that of, it'll get stronger and stronger and bigger and bigger. Your anger will get stronger and stronger and bigger and bigger. That's not the kind of plant that we want to be growing. We need to root out bitterness. We need to take bitterness and get all the roots out. All anger, all root of bitterness is just anger that's stayed with you for a long time and you're not letting it go. It's hatred toward other people that you won't let go. It's holding a grudge. And the longer that we hold that grudge, the deeper those roots will grow. So if we have a root of bitterness, if we see ourselves have anger, hatred, root of bitterness, any of these qualities, we're not just bitter toward others. We've been bitter for quite some time. And we need to address it. We need to address it. If we want to have a pure tongue, if we want to have a pure heart, we have to address anger at its core, at its fundament. Let's turn over to Psalm chapter 12 for the second point. Psalm chapter 12. Psalm 12 and verse 3. Let's pick it up in verse 1, actually. Help, Lord, for the godly man ceases, for the faithful fail from among the children of men. They speak vanity, everyone with his neighbor, with flattering lips, and with a double heart do they speak. The Lord shall cut off all flattering lips and the tongue that speaks proud things. God doesn't like it when we speak proud things. Where does pride come from? Does it come from our esophagus? Does it come from our vocal cords? No, it comes from much deeper within, just like anger. God doesn't want us to have anger. We can be angry at the things that we see in the news. We can have righteous indignation, if you could put it that way. We can be angry about things in life. God is clearly angry about a lot of things. But he's angry, and we should be angry about the right things. We should be angry when we see abortion. We should be angry when we see terrible misconduct throughout the world. God is offended. God is angry at that. We ought to be too. But there's a kind of anger that we need to address. Anger toward other people, hatred, violence toward other people. We need to address that. But God also says now we ought to address pride. Pride. Our lips can speak pridefully. Just read verse 3 again. The Lord shall cut off all flattering lips and the tongue that speaks proud things. Verse 4, who have said, with our tongue we will prevail. Our lips are our own. Who is Lord over us? Prideful people see themselves as the ultimate authority. They don't need to go under authority. Who is Lord over us? We have the final say. I get to do what I want in my life. They think that they've got control, but at the end of the day, they don't. Turn over to Proverbs 14. We have to change the pride deep within in order to affect and change the words that we speak that sound prideful, that lead to us saying things that are prideful as well. Proverbs 14 and verse 3. In the mouth of the foolish is a rod of pride, but the lips of the wise shall preserve them. There is a rod of pride. Pride is not a good thing. You know, there are a lot of proud people in this world. People who think that they've got it all figured out. They don't need any help from other people. They don't need God, in effect. As soon as we realize that we need God in every regard in our lives, we're starting to address pride. Pride is saying, I've got this figured out on my own. I don't need help. I don't need to go to other people. I don't need to go to God. I can just live my life fine, and I'll be just fine, thank you. Putting pride away is realizing that we do need help in every regard in our lives. We can't rely on ourselves. Turn back one page to Proverbs 13 and verse 10. Only by pride comes contention. But with the well-advised is wisdom. So pride comes only by pride comes contention. So whenever we see arguments, whenever we see conflict between people, it may not just be anger involved. Anger is clearly part of it. We need to address anger as well. But part of the contention is the pride that's either in one or both parties. Pride is something that whenever we see contention, whenever we see conflict, it's because one or both parties in the conflict have deep pride. They think that their way is right. They're not willing to concede. Why do you think we have a nation in America today that is so divided? There is so much contention between the right and the left. It's because there's pride on both sides. Both sides just know that they are right. And there is no convincing them otherwise. So how can you end a conflict between two sides when they both believe and know that they're right? It's an impossible position. This is why time can't go on. This is why, how on earth could this world continue when two can't walk together except they be agreed? It's fundamental. You can't walk with other people unless you be agreed with them, unless you find common ground. But if you just both know that you're right and you disagree on something, you can't walk together. You have to separate. This nation is in deep, deep trouble. And only the kingdom of God can fix it. But if we see pride in ourselves, let's imagine we see ourselves becoming in conflict with others. If we see that we're contentious, or that we're often in arguments with other people, if it's a regular occurrence in our lives, it's probably because we're the prideful one. We can't just assume the other person, I'm in a lot of conflict with people because they're the prideful. Everybody I'm in conflict with just happens to be very prideful. No, if you're in conflict with a lot of people, it's probably you that's the prideful one. You might be the self-righteous one. You might be the one who needs to address the character flaws. And if you do, see if the contentions go away. See if you're in less conflict. I bet it will. I bet you would be in less conflict. But think about this. Pride itself, the emotion or the character trait of the character flaw of pride itself doesn't speak words. It doesn't cause contention, excuse me. It's what you say that's prideful that causes contention. Proverbs chapter 18, a couple chapters over here. Proverbs 18 and verse 6. A fool's lips enter into contention, and his mouth calls for strokes. Because of his pride. Why does that fool's lips enter into contention? Because pride came out of his mouth. If we address the pride, we won't be considered foolish anymore. And we won't speak things that are foolish. and become contentious with other people. And here's another aspect of pride. Said earlier, we came across a verse that talked about lying, and we're coming back to that now. Lying is the ninth commandment, as we all know. Shall not lie. But why do people lie? Have you ever thought about it? What is it that causes a person to lie? Why do they do it? Well, it's because they don't want to be seen by other people as having a bad image, for example. We don't want others to see our flaws. We don't want other people to see us for who we really are, so we lie to them. We want to preserve our image. Or we don't want to be implicated for something that we did that was wrong, so we try and hide it. Psalm 31. Lying is actually a form of pride. When you really think about it, when you really understand what lying is and why we lie. Proverbs 31 and verse 18, let the lying lips be put to silence, which speak grievous things proudly. Lying lips speak grievous things proudly and contemptuously against the righteous. This verse connects lying with pride. If we have lying lips, we're speaking grievous things proudly, it says. It's just straight up. The Bible interprets itself. It tells us what lying is at its fundament. But why? Before answering that question, let's understand another verse that confirms that lying is tied to pride. Proverbs, Psalm chapter 59. Psalm 59. Psalm 59 and verse 12. Says this, for the sin of their mouth and the words of their lips, let them even be taken in their pride, and for cursing and lying which they speak. Lying is a form of pride. Again, because when we lie, we don't want others to see our flaws. We want to try and hide things about ourselves. We want to preserve our image. That's prideful. If I try and lie to you about something that I did, it's because I'm trying to preserve my image in your eyes. I'm trying to make myself look better to you. That's prideful. I don't want you to see that I'm not as good as I truly as you think that I am. I don't want you to see that. I want you to see that I'm polished. I'm wonderful. I'm a good person. Lying tries to hide that. And it's prideful. Really, it's in a certain ways, it's vain as well. Which gets into our next point, vanity. Vanity means emptiness. Vanity means emptiness. If we are vain, means we're focusing on things that are just empty. Empty. Proverbs 14 and verse 23. In all labor, Proverbs 14, 23, in all labor there's profit. Whenever we do certain things, there's benefit to it at the end of the day. But the talk of the lips tends only to penury. What is that? Penury is poverty. If we just do a lot of talking, if we talk a lot, it tends only to poverty. Some people just love to talk. And that's okay. Talking is fine. Talking is good. It's better than not being able to talk at all and just kind of standing quiet and never saying anything. Talking is a good thing, particularly if we have something edifying to say. But there comes a point when we can be talking too much. Ecclesiastes chapter 5. Ecclesiastes 5 and verse 1. This gets into the vows. This is specifically talking about speaking to God, but let's read it here. Keep your foot from when you go to the house of God, and be more ready to hear than to give a sacrifice of fools. Even when coming before God, says God, says we should be ready to hear what he has to say. Have our minds open and ready for what he is telling us, rather than opening our mouths too quickly. For they consider not that they do evil. Be not rash with your mouth, and let not your heart be hasty to utter anything before God. For God is in heaven, and you are upon earth. Therefore, let your words be few. We think about having long, drawn-out prayers, but at the end of the day, think about what God says here. It's God wants us to be concise as when we can. He doesn't want us to drag on and on and on. He wants us to be concise. He wants us to be to the point. He wants our prayers to be finely ground, incense. For a dream comes through the multitude of business, and a fool's voice is known by a multitude of words. A fool's voice is known by a multitude of words. Now that doesn't just have application when we come to pray before God. It has application in life. Whenever you see somebody who is just talking more than anybody else, can't let anybody else get a word in, or they dominate the conversation every time, it's okay to dominate the conversation once in a while. It's good to do that. It's good to give heed to other people at times as well. If we are always dominating the conversation, we are always the one who's doing the vast majority of the talking, what does God say about that? For in a dream is a multitude of business, and a fool's voice is known by a multitude of words. We're considered by God to become foolish, and we don't want to be foolish. When you vow a vow unto God, defer not to pay it, for he has no pleasure in fools. Pay that which you have vowed. Better is it that you should not vow than that you should vow and not pay. When we come before God, he doesn't want us to vow, make all these words and vow a bunch of things and then never pay it. That's bad. That's evil and wrong. It's better that we not vow to God certain things. It can get you in hot water. You don't want to make hasty vows. Caution everybody against doing that. Suffer not your mouth to cause your flesh to sin. If we do make a hasty vow and we can't keep it, then every time we break that vow, we're sinning. We don't want to be put in a position like that. Suffer not your mouth to cause your flesh to sin, neither say you before an angel that it was an error. Wherefore should God be angry at your voice and destroy the work of your hands? For in the multitude of dreams and many words, there are also various vanities. Vanities, but fear you, God. So when we see that there's a multitude of words, it's foolishness. Multitude of words is also vanity. It's emptiness. At a point, we cross kind of this invisible barrier, this invisible threshold where we've now said too much that's unnecessary to say, and we've gone into the realm of foolishness and vanity. And we don't want to be there. That's not an area we want to dwell in life. Proverbs chapter 10, one final verse on this subject. Proverbs 10 and verse 19. In the multitude of words, there wants not sin. So we've seen that having too many words causes both vanity and foolishness, but there's also sin involved in speaking too much. In a multitude of words, there wants not sin, there lacks not sin, but he that refrains his lips is wise. You're wise. In a multitude of words, why is it that there is sin in a multitude of words? Why? It's because is it because of the words themselves are sin? You know, you could be speaking a multitude of words and they're all good things. You may not be saying anything wrong at all, but at a point, you've crossed that invisible threshold, like we've talked about. and sin becomes involved. You may be speaking the truth or even talking about good things, but talking too much in and of itself means we have an issue with self-focus, which is vanity. We like to hear ourselves more than we like to hear what others have to say. If we're truly interested in other people and living the give way of life and living a life where we're trying to serve other people, serving other people isn't always necessarily trying to dispense on them knowledge, give them information. Serving other people can mean letting them give you information, letting them share their experiences with you as well. Speaking too many words becomes selfish and not selfless. We have to become selfless in our conversations. Not to say that now you flip to the other side and now you never say anything and only let other people talk to you because now I'm being very selfless. No. There's a balance. You want to contribute because you want to edify other people around you. You just don't want to do it too much because then you're only talking yourself and never letting other people share their experiences or their knowledge with you as well. So, brethren, once we've diagnosed the underlying character issues we need to work on, that our tongues have exposed, do your own study. This isn't a message about how to learn to overcome pride. This isn't a message about how to learn to overcome anger, hatred, roots of bitterness, or vanity. This is a message to help us understand and see where we might have these underlying character flaws, first and foremost, so that we can go address them on our own, take charge in our lives. If we have recognized today that, you know what, I get offended easily, or maybe I offend other people a lot, or maybe I'm finding myself in contention with other people because of the words that are in my mouth, that's because I've got pride issues. That's because I've got anger issues. That's because I've got self-righteousness. That's because I've got vanity. All of these things we need to look and see and diagnose ourselves today where we might be at fault. And if we can do that, then we can go out and really start to change our tongues. As soon as we walk out of this door, we can start to change the way that we have anger. Address the anger problems that we might have. Address the roots of bitterness and vanity and pride. But brethren, fixing these things is not going to be an overnight affair. It's not something that you can go to bed tonight and all of a sudden tomorrow wake up and all your anger problems are gone. You don't have any pride or vanity. That's not something that we can do overnight. So the question becomes, what can we do in the interim while we're working on these underlying issues? You have the tools now to address whether you have these underlying issues or not. And you can go on your own time and study, how do I fix anger? How do I fix pride, self-righteousness, vanity, all of these things? You can go on your own time and study that. There's plenty of messages, plenty of sermons, plenty of literature that we have on those subjects that you can go figure out how to address those things on your own. And watch, as you do address them, watch your tongue. It will change. What you say will change. You won't get in conflict with other people as often. So in the interim, while we're not going to be able to change our anger overnight, pride overnight, in the interim, there are ways, specific ways, that we can address our tongue, even if we haven't yet fixed the problems beneath. That's what we're going to focus on for the remainder of the message. What are these little things that we can do right now? Because pride we can't address right now. We've got to address that over the long term. But what can we do right now? You know, God says that in James that we can't tame the tongue completely. But I'll ask you, have you been able to stop yourself from cursing? Maybe before you came into the church, you cursed a lot. Maybe before you came into the church, you used God's name in vain. Do we do that anymore? No. So maybe you used euphemisms. Do we use those anymore? No. So the tongue can be tamed to a certain degree. It just can't be fully tamed. It can't be fully domesticated, if you could put it that way. But you can stop yourself and do little things to alter your tongue specifically. So what can we do right now? What can we do when we walk out of this door today? Psalm chapter 141. We actually read this verse earlier, but we'll read it again. It's one of the things David prayed about. Psalm 141 and verse 3. When David knew in verse 4 that he needed to incline his heart to incline not his heart to any evil, verse 3, what did he ask God? He said, God, set a watch, O Lord, before my mouth. Keep the door of my lips. His first reaction was, if I need to change my tongue, Father, I need to go to you first. I need to ask you for help. So that's what we can do right now. If we want to affect our tongue, change our tongue, use different words in our lives, the greatest place to begin is to go to God and ask God the very thing that David said. Set a watch, O Lord, before my mouth. Keep the door of my lips. Help me to control it. It's one of the fruits of the Spirit is self-control, temperance. If we have God's Spirit in us, and it's God's very Spirit that's in us, self-control is part of that Spirit. All we're doing is asking God to activate His Holy Spirit to work with us in a stronger way, to control our mouths, control the things that we say. All we have to do is pray for God to help us in this way. You know, regularly I contact, as we call them, church inquiries, people who are interested in attending services with us. And when I speak with them, I pray, I ask God, please guide my lips, guide my words, help me to say things that are going to be helpful and edifying and beneficial to them and discern whether they're being called or not. Praying before these kinds of things is crucial. James chapter 1. James chapter 1. Okay, we'll pick it up here in verse 17. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above. Comes down from the Father of lights, with whom is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. So if we ask God, in the spirit of what we just read in Psalm 141, if we ask God to keep the door of our mouth, to help protect our mouths from saying things that we shouldn't say, verse 17 of James 1 says, that's a good gift and a perfect gift from God. And he doesn't have any variableness, neither shadow of turning. If we ask it, He's going to give it to us. If we truly desire to change the way that we speak to other people, He's going to give us that ability. Verse 18, of His own will begot us with the word of truth, that we should be a kind of first fruits of His creatures. Wherefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. Swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath. You know, this point begins to address, let's imagine we have the problem of we talk too much in conversation. All that we have to do in order to really begin to address the vanity that we might have in talking too much is try exercising a little bit more of your power of listening. Be slow to speak, swift to hear, slow to speak. Be ready to hear. If this is our mode of operating, if this is how we operate in our conversations, if we're more interested in hearing what other people have to say rather than saying what we want to say, we will be fulfilling this verse and automatically starting to put that vanity out of our lives. Isn't that an amazing thing, how quickly this can be addressed? By a single verse, be swift to hear. Be ready to hear. slow to speak, and slow to wrath. Okay, let's turn over to Proverbs chapter 15. These are tools that we can put in our tool bag, if you will, our immediate tool bag, so that we can go out of here today and already immediately begin to implement changing our tongues. So we've gone through 2 points already. Psalm 141, asking God to set a watch on our lips, keep the door of my lips. And then number two was be swift to hear, be ready to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath. Now here's the third point, Proverbs 15, in verse 1. Proverbs 15 and verse 1. We heard this in the sermonette today. A soft answer turns away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. A soft answer turns away wrath. How we respond to other people, if we respond softly, if we remain controlled, temperate, with our emotions, we don't let our emotions grab hold of us. We stay emotionally mature ourselves in a conversation, even if we're offended, even if we just got offended. We have to remain calm and have a soft answer. A soft answer will turn away wrath. But grievous words, if we say something snide in response, real sharp in response, all it will do is escalate things. It will only escalate the situation. It won't ever make anything better. When have we ever had a rebuttal to somebody? It might feel good at the second that you say it, but as soon as you say it, it only causes more problems. Oh, I really got that person with your snide remark and response, but then now there's just deeper hatred on both sides, deeper anger on both sides, more contention, more pride. All that does is compound the problems that we are already trying to address deep within. So having a soft response right now will begin to alleviate the pride, begin to alleviate the anger that you have inside. If you have enough control just to have a soft response when you're in a heated situation with somebody else, that will immediately start to calm things down. A soft answer turns away wrath. And if you've tried to do that before, if you've tried to exercise that ability before, you'll see, you know firsthand why that is so helpful. Okay? That's the third point. A soft answer turns away wrath. Let's turn over to Colossians chapter 4. Colossians chapter 4. Verse 6. Verse 5, let's pick it up. Walk in wisdom toward them that are without, redeeming the time. Part of walking in wisdom is knowing what to say and when to say it. Verse 6, let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer every man. Some of the finer points of conversing are not just knowing what to say. It's not just knowing that you should be talking. It's knowing what to say and when to say it. There's time and judgment involved with everything that we do in life. And our speech, the things that we say, ought to be seasoned with grace. You know, nobody wants to eat an egg without any kind of salt on it or like a mustard or some kind of delicious garnish or something delicious on top. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants an egg that's unseasoned. Nobody wants chicken, just a chicken breast. Maybe it was even cooked a little bit too long and it's a little bit dry. Nobody wants that without some, you got to put seasoning on. Garlic, you got to put put salt, you got to put pepper, something on there to make it, to spice it up a little bit. That's what our conversation should be like as well. Our conversation shouldn't just be bland, it should be seasoned with salt, seasoned with grace and salt, that you may know how you ought to answer every man. Part of answering every man is first praying to God about it, asking Him, please guide me, help me to know what to say. And He'll give you the words. There's entire prophecies on how people are told, don't lean on your own understanding and your own words, just I'll speak through you. Now, God isn't specifically doing that, but He kind of is. If we pray for it, God will use your mouth to His benefit. And He will help you say the things that you need to say in the way that you need to say it. Seasoned with salt, always with grace. We can ask ourselves this question, is what I'm saying to other people edifying to them? Do I edify my listener when I speak to them? Or is what I'm saying bringing them down? Or is it negative? Or is it just completely not edifying? Some things are just, the Bible says, we just simply shouldn't even talk about. It's not profitable to speak of certain things, so we don't even talk about them in life. So is our speech edifying to the hearer? If we don't have anything good to say, maybe don't bring it up at all. You've heard that phrase before. Let's turn over to Proverbs chapter 13. That was the fourth point. Let your speech be with grace, seasoned with salt. Proverbs 13. And verse 3, Proverbs 13, 3, we'll read two verses here. 1 and 13 and 1 and 21. So Proverbs 13, 3, he that keeps his mouth keeps his life, but he that opens wide his lips shall have destruction. Let's read Proverbs 21, 23. Proverbs 21, 23. Whoso keeps his mouth and his tongue keeps his soul from troubles. So we can stay away from destruction and troubles if we do this one simple thing. If we just decide at a moment, if we're angry, if we're finding ourselves in a difficult situation, here's what you need to do. The best thing to do at some times is to simply say nothing. Say nothing. Keep your mouth. Keep your peace. Hold your peace, as the Bible says. Because what it might do at that instant for you is protect you from destruction and protect you from trouble. It's better to be silent, as Abraham Lincoln said. It's better to be silent and thought a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt. Better to be silent. You know, the Bible even over and over again talks about how there's wisdom in silence. If you remain silent sometimes, you're actually going to be deemed a wiser person. If you open your mouth, the problem is there could be issues. and you're not deemed wise any longer. So if you want to be deemed a wise person, at times the best thing to do is to remain silent. Don't say anything. Hold your tongue. Hold your peace. That's the fifth point. The fifth takeaway point right now, and the final takeaway point is in Matthew 5. Matthew 5 and verse 33. Back to the Sermon on the Mount. Matthew 5:33. Again, you have heard that it has been said of them of old time, you shall not forswear yourself, but shall perform unto the Lord your oaths. We actually read about that in Ecclesiastes 5 earlier today. But I say unto you, swear not at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is His footstool, neither by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great King. Neither shall you swear by your head. Don't swear by anything, because you cannot make one hair white or black. You have no control over that. But let your communication be this: yes, yes, and no, no. For whatsoever is more than these comes of evil. You're better off not making a promise at all than to make a promise and to break it. We don't want to be put in a position where we promise somebody something and then we can't fulfill it. We can't follow through. So when, here's the sixth point. All we have to do in our lives, if we want to start making better decisions, being more effective with our tongue, all we have to do is just when we mean yes, we say yes, and when we mean no, we say no. Speak the truth. Speak the truth. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. And follow through. Push yourself outside your comfort zone. You know, this isn't saying if you that means it's not like we don't ever want to talk to other people, make commitments to other people. But don't overcommit to certain things and then find yourself to be where you're not able to follow through. And then you end up lying. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. Don't commit yourself above what you can, what you know you're able to do. So brethren, as we come to a conclusion here, the tongue is a very accurate, you could say, a well-calibrated gauge that discerns your insides, your heart, discerns precisely what's going on inside of you. Hopefully, I've proved to you today that you can do the impossible. You can tame your tongue. The tongue is tameable, but it's not. That's the thing. It's not the tongue that's tameable. It's the heart that's tameable. But we have to tame our heart first if we want to have a tame tongue. So brethren, whether we struggle with anger, if we struggle and self-diagnose ourselves with problems with anger, vanity, pride, roots of bitterness, hatred, or any other kind of emotion that might corrupt our tongue. Because what I laid out to you today wasn't the sum total. See if there's any other character flaws, emotions that lead us to have an improper tongue that might corrupt our tongue. Nevertheless, let's diagnose those problems and begin working on them today.